Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan and Jorgen.
Gentlemen.
The Not A Thing podcast up and running for episode 230. Oh, what a beautiful day.
2018.
Yeah.
We're still here.
We did it.
We did it.
Yeah. It's work. I mean, doing the show. I mean, which we gladly do for free. Although we would love a sponsor. Hashtag Moon Tent. So please do check in with us if you would like to be a sponsor of the Not a Thing podcast. You may notice after the theme song, we don't have a sponsor bumper. That's because we don't have a sponsor. So if you would like to sponsor us, please let us know. It would be fun. Help us.
Yeah, if you want to make our podcast one of those ones you have to use the 15-second skip on, you should do that.
I don't know what you're talking about. I know everything there is to know about Audible.
I'm more of a Squarespace kind of guy.
Or... Oh, goddamn Squarespace.
Stamps.com. Promo code WTF.
Wait. But people can skip these 15 minutes, right? Because we're not actually getting paid for all.
No, that's true.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. In fact, please don't go to any of those companies until they sponsor us. So
no,
unless you go to MeUndies.
Oh man,
hashtag not a thing. Yes. Okay, so
we should just start doing commercials on our show and not get paid for them, just to make more legitimate.
We can just send invoices. I mean, there are people who have done that as an entire industry. They just like send random invoices to companies and hope that they get lost in the stream of invoices. So people just pay them.
At least we can say something here.
Okay. All right. I'll start. Anyhow, I'll start. I got a pretty good printer. We can work that out. Yeah.
I hear this patent troll business is pretty lucrative.
Oh man. So we've been out and about the last few weeks. There's been a lot of stuff happening. So it's been a little while since we've recorded. I don't think we're rusty at all. Probably not. Anyway,
I've been staying oiled.
Too much information. Anyway, we're gonna kind of actually in that kind of oil kind of mode, I guess, if you could go motor oil and then Motor City. That's where I was going. I hope that.
Wow.
Maybe not. Probably not. But I was just in Detroit for a week traveling for work, and I had a pretty good time. It was I was not in Detroit proper. I was about 20 minutes north of Detroit downtown, but I did get into a little bit of the downtown area. I waved at Canada because there, right across the Detroit River there is Windsor, Canada. Interestingly, it's south of Detroit right there because of the way Michigan is shaped. It's
shaped like a Republican congressional district.
It's a little oddly shaped. There's one shirt that I saw because Michigan's kind of two pieces. It looks like there's kind of this funky shape on the left, and then the thing on the right looks like a mitten. So I saw some shirts that say Michigan smitten by the mitten, and it's just it's adorable. I wanted one. Wow. I ended up not buying it, but I did have a pretty good time walking around the Motor City, getting food here and there. The one thing that I found was very, very strange was the roads are terrible in Michigan. Just terrible.
It's good for road testing.
And it's just sad that, you know, a city known as the Motor City, right? You have
The highway was invented.
Yeah. And there it seems like they have not maintained those highways since they were invented.
They were built by Henry Ford and have withered ever since.
They haven't maintained their water delivery system either.
No,
so,
they haven't.
True.
There are many essential services in the city of Detroit that are problematic.
Yes. Yes, I would agree for sure. I drank a lot of bottled water this week, so
I'm gonna reveal my geographical ignorance with this next one, but I proudly pass on all geography questions in Trivial Pursuit,
especially in the United States, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So Detroit is located by, is that one of the Great Lakes?
Yeah. Yeah, because Michigan is by Lake Michigan, by the Great Lakes. Yes. Yes.
Is that connected to ocean, or is it a freshwater?
Freshwater.
It is freshwater. That's freshwater. But it's interesting. I mean, lakes are, as far as I know, unless there's some strange thing going on, they're all freshwater. And then as long as there's a river flowing to the ocean, I mean, it's still considered freshwater. Right. They're real big. You could say that they're great.
Ooh. Because in the excellent movie Only Lovers Left Alive, and did I mention it on the last podcast when you said you were going to Detroit, or have we talked about it?
No, not yet.
But in the excellent movie Only Lovers Left Alive, Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston are vampires.
Oh my gosh, I am so on board. All of these words have made so much sense to me.
And it takes place in Detroit, modern day, and six, 7 years ago. And it's a city fallen apart, and like they drive past all these abandoned houses, and it's portraying the city as just really abandoned and falling apart and quite vampire haunting ground like.
I can see that. Yeah.
And it's truly excellent. It's a great movie, and Detroit's a great setting for it. But the one line that I always come back to, which really stuck out and I remember, is at one point Tom Hiddleston's character says, "Don't mourn this city, it'll come back, because after all they have water and that's going to be the only thing that counts in the future," kind of. And I thought that is a really interesting take on it for Detroit. This was before the Flint crisis. Mm-hmm. gave that line like a little bit of a different meaning, but with Detroit having been through what it's been through for the last 10-15 years, I was curious about how do they feel about the city over there, and do they feel like it's going to come back, because after all they do have access to fresh water, as I've learned today.
Yeah, I mean, I think all the people I met, I mean, they were upbeat about living where they were living. I mean, I didn't meet anyone though that lived in Detroit proper, because like I said, I was in Southfield, which is about 30 minutes north, and I knew a bunch of folks that were that lived in Ann Arbor, which is kind of where University of Michigan is. And so I think Detroit as a city, you know, they it has all of the things that should make it work. Like there's a public transportation loop that is elevated, little elevated automated train that's there. Their sports arenas are right next to each other in this kind of big complex area. I watched a Detroit Tigers game while I was down there. I mean, it seems like the food culture is kind of filtering in. I ate very well when I was around town going to different places. So I think it has, you know, all of the kind of marks of like being on the verge of changing stuff. But there, you know, like we were saying, there's a lot of fundamental things that are still problems, and that has to get kind of addressed. And I don't know what kind of, you know, comprehensively, if anything is even being, you know, done or looked at for that kind of thing. One interesting thing that, you know, is I, on the way up to where I was working, you know, I'm on whatever freeway that is. And one of the things that you cross is 8 Mile Road.
Right.
You know, on the way up there, and
you better lose yourself in the moment.
That's pretty good, man. That's pretty good. You should take that on the road. we have,
jeez.
Not now.
Yeah. But we, you know, I interestingly ate at a couple, places for dinner over the week, and one of them was north of 8 Mile Road, one of them was south, and it was very obvious which one I was in. It is very segregated still, in the that I have seen, anyway. I was only there for a week, and I was only going between like a few different places, but it was very like, oh, now I'm in this part of town, kind of very obviously and very quickly. So that's still a thing in Detroit. But But yeah, I would like to have gone back there. I think it would be cool to go back there in a vacation context rather than a work context. I only really had like 2 days, although I did go to Henry Ford Museum on the last day I was there, which I recommend if only to do the factory tour, which I found just absolutely fascinating. I mean, Henry Ford pioneered the whole idea of an assembly line, and they had that running there. Interestingly, the assembly line works, or at least when you see assembly lines on TV and stuff, when they're talking about Henry Ford's day, it's like the cars and the car parts are moving down like a conveyor belt. And it is like that, except the conveyor belt is these kind of 1.5 times around the size of your car, and the workers are actually walking onto the platform where the car parts are, and then they step back off to go back to wherever their station is as that car moves past. And I was counting the seconds in between the cars passing, and a car comes through that plant every 45 seconds. That's nuts.
That is fast.
Yeah. It's really fascinating. It was very cool to see kind of all of that. The actual rest of the Henry Ford Museum is pretty neat. They have a big section of just different cars, and they have a whole parade of former presidential limousines, including the one that Kennedy was in. So really interesting.
What time?
Kind of set of stuff. Sorry, what?
what that Kennedy was in when?
That
he's been in a lot of cars.
That one.
Oh.
Yeah, which was retrofitted apparently for Nixon. They put the hard top back on, essentially, and then reinforced
it. Good call.
Yeah. So
a little late.
A little bit. But
Henry Ford was also the pioneer of the groundbreaking concept of paying your workers enough money for them to afford your product, which I thought was quite smart, and in this day and age is considered rather new and interesting, different, you may say.
Indeed. So yeah, I would like to go back on vacation if I could only ever get some vacation, right? One of the other things that we learned this week was that there was a study that in America anyway, which is kind of notorious for having low amounts of vacation per year, and we tend to be kind of workaholics by nature, but they did the math and figured out that the average American works more than or has more work days versus, you know, essentially idle or vacation days versus a medieval peasant.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah. Not a thing, right?
Progress.
It's unbelievable in the sense that that is so wrong, but it's not unbelievable in the sense that I can't believe that's true, because I can totally believe it's true.
Well, it's an interesting... I mean, I have to read the article a little bit more closely to get how they figure out the math on it, because if you're farming, I mean, I guess there are idle days, because there's some days when you're, you know, tending your crops or your animals or whatever, and then there's some days when you're not. So I don't know how they like normalize it to a work day kind of a thing. It does mention that one of the, you know, because they specifically picked a medieval peasant in Europe, one of the other features of that is that there are a number of kind of just enforced holidays, because Europe at the time was super Christian. Not that it isn't now, but yes, it was super duper Christian at the point where it was bleeding into, you know, the how, you know, kind of work is regulated, and that's why you take, you know, Sunday off and that kind of thing. And so there were a lot more kind of religious holidays and festivals that turned into essentially more days off. Also, the way that work is kind of codified is, you know, you work when there's the work to be done, like I said earlier. So there's some, you know, you're not necessarily putting in a, you know, whatever we would consider a full day of work every day. It might be, you know, a little more flexible depending on what's happening, that kind of thing, what you're working on. If you're a blacksmith and there's nothing for you to smith, then there's no work for you to do, right? So it does, I think, just, I mean, even if that is as nonsensical as it is just as a attention grabber, I think it's fairly obvious the difference in kind of work. I don't want to say work ethic so much as it is the kind of like compulsion to not take time off. And some of that is like necessary, because if you're an hourly worker, the more time you take off, the less time you're paid, essentially. So I certainly see that as a thing. But I do know, just from a personal point of view, I don't take a lot of vacation. And I think I'm lucky in the sense that I don't feel like I need it, because a lot of the work that I do is super fulfilling. At the same time, I've also worked at a place where I didn't take a lot of vacation, but I was just doing it because that's what I thought I had to do. I grew up with a very work is super duper important, and you have to do as hard as you have to work as hard as you can all the time. And so that meant for me not taking a lot of vacation and working 60 hour weeks when I first got out of college and started working like a real job. And I think that is that aspect of the culture is starting to kind of get messed up by a few different things. But at the same time, what's happening is people are maybe working less at one job, but now there's kind of compulsion to take on like a side hustle or some other kind of thing to fill up more hours.
Yeah, I mean, I recently transitioned jobs, and I went from working 40 hours a week to, I still work 40 hours a week, but my commute is 20 hours a week.
Yikes.
So that's really like 60 hours a week of committing time to work.
Uh-huh.
And because it's a startup, I'm given time off. Like I started with time off that I could take. I'll get more vacation overall for the year, but there is also that feeling of, well, there's going to be stuff going on and it's going to be really busy, and I probably won't take any time off this year.
Wow.
And that's a weird feeling. It's like, well, there's too much work to do. I can't take time.
Yeah. And I think that having that kind of startup culture is very, I think it's super fulfilling, because it's easy to see your impact, your actual impact into the product or the thing you're working on, which is a nice change from a lot of the places that I have worked. I tend to work at smaller companies because I feel that I do have that kind of connection. At the same time, there is that aspect of like resource constraint. It's like there's not enough hours in the day to do the work that needs to be done. And if you feel passionate about it and you take ownership of that thing, you end up not taking a lot of vacation.
And then, of course, there's the Norwegian model, which is the exact opposite end of the spectrum, where everyone has 5 weeks of vacation when they want to. And in addition, most places just shut down over Christmas and Easter. So you have basically 7 weeks of vacation every year. And you're kind of forced to take them. For example, we're the reason I have so much vacation still this year is because I work for right now I'm self-employed in a sense, so I can balance it the way that I want to. But even last year when I was fully employed, I had this much vacation, and it's of course bananas in an American setting.
Uh-huh.
To have that much vacation.
Yeah, what do you mean you shut down for a week?
Well, the entire country basically closes down. I mean, for example, dealing with government institutions, they will have summer times. Everyone goes home at 3. Most stores are open, but for example, ad agencies, where my first career was, they don't do any business for 3 weeks in July. That entire industry just kind of has an unspoken agreement about just taking 3 weeks off in July where nothing happens. And then everyone goes on vacations and they come back rested or relaxed and happy and eager to go. And it's of course a very, 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 it's very nice to have that be part of your culture, and everyone shares into it and has the same mentality about it. And I think it's an excellent thing.
Do you think part of that is enabled because of the resources that Norway has?
Or does you no, think this is much older than that. This is much older than, I mean, Norway didn't get the oil until December 23rd, 1969. and they didn't get to put that wealth into service until the mid 70s. And it wasn't until like the mid 90s that they actually started stocking up properly with a ton of money. This came about after World War II. Norway just kind of hit a reset and redid their social system as a setup, and agreed to have sick leave. They agreed to have unemployment benefits, and they agreed to have national vacations. So there's this old thing called Fellesferie, which basically means common vacation, which is those 3 weeks in July where that's when like everyone goes on vacation together, the whole country. And things are just not moving very much then. So it's more of a chosen national mentality.
Interesting.
Than a result of a ton of wealth. And I think it's really good. There was a congressional study that came out 5 or 6 years ago by the American Congress, where they commissioned a study to look at the benefits of giving people vacation time. And it came out overwhelmingly positive. It said quite simply that vacation is an excellent thing. It gives people more energy when they come back from vacation. They are happier, they are more productive and efficient and more energetic, and they do a better job. So this was a surprising result, and it was put in some drawer that no one's recovered yet.
They've put top men on that project.
Yes.
If you remember that from, what is that? Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yes.
Yes.
I think the other side of the coin from a vacation point of view is that kind of, it is a very, kind of just uniquely American thing to have this kind of, I must go do everything attitude.
Yeah.
And so that is a very, I think that is a very different cultural thing. Even if it's not like an actual thing, I think that's we espouse the idea of that kind of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and American like can do. And yet they're, it's more like the idea of it than the actual implementation of that.
I think it ties into that whole, the American dream aspect of it, and the Horatio Alger, and like it, you are responsible for your own destiny.
Yeah.
And if you work hard and never rest, then you can make it too in this country. That's kind of been the an aspect of the American social contract for centuries. Mm-hmm. And it's only now, like in Norway, they chose a very different social contract where if you trust in society and the government and realize that we are all in this together and that we are only as fast as the slowest buffalo in the herd, then you will have a good life and you'll be taken care of when you get old and if you're sick and if you're not able to find work. It's just two entirely different approaches to society and a national conscience. And what came first, the way you set up the society or the way the social conscience and mentality is? It's a longer discussion, but in the US, I think it's definitely played a part in creating this, this society of selfishness and greed that we're experiencing right now, which again has led to this toxic masculinity. And it's a lot of downsides to it, and one of them is very little vacation time.
Yeah, I think one of the big things that that comes out of that is that level of trust in kind of social systems rather than like, I have to do it myself kind of aspect of it. And I think that plays into a lot of different things.
But, yeah. Huge subject.
But yeah, we're probably going to a lot more to talk about in that, but I think it's that aspect of it, and the trust in the kind of having a social safety net in a way that isn't stigmatized, I think is maybe the biggest piece of that for me. You know, because in the United States, it's like welfare is a bad word, and having some kind of unemployment or some kind of, you know, government assistance is completely stigmatized in the United States. Whereas in many countries in Europe, I'm reading about Scandinavia specifically. I'm finally reading The Almost Nearly Perfect People,
mm-hmm.
which is a really great book. And just, you know, reading about how, you know, that was kind of a common factor in a lot of countries in Europe, and you know, it kind of goes into, you know, reasons why and things like that. It's a really fascinating book, but it kind of leans on that kind of like a little bit of kind of empathy about other people's situations, whereas I feel like that is something that is de-emphasized in the United States as well. So. Let's see. I'm not flipping this over. That's not doing it. You're doing it. You do it. I'm not changing the subject. You change that subject.
Are we moving into mine now?
We are. We're gonna move over. We're gonna change subjects on that one. I think the.
Believe you missed the perfect segue.
Did I?
Yes. I mean. Americans. Okay. Are you gonna take this out? Are you
no,
ready?
I'm not. No, this is live. We're doing it live.
Okay. I just lost 10 minutes of the conversation on vacation because my phone, which I had accidentally left in the sun, overheated. So I had to switch to my computer. Oh, and no. you guys didn't even notice I was gone. Until we rethink the role of the social contract and toxic masculinity and all of that kind of stuff, Americans will continue to be worker ants.
I see.
Speaking of ants.
Nicely done.
Yeah. So there was a fascinating, I get tons of newsletters from all the magazines and websites that I enjoy reading. And one of them is Wired Magazine, which is and has been a fantastic magazine for a long time. And I rarely click on the articles, but I like to just kind of skim through them to see what's going on in the world. And one of the headlines caught my eye because it looked like it was from The Onion. And it said, climate change made zombie ants even more cunning. Which naturally piques my interest. So I go in and I read the article. And it is about a kind of fungus, a parasitic fungus, mm-hmm. that infects ants, turns them into zombies, makes them, in fact, I'll read this from the article because it's fantastic. The zombie ant, an entrancing species with two long hooks coming out of its back. By now you may have heard its famous tale. A parasitic fungus known as Ophiocordyceps invades an ant's body, growing through its tissues and soaking up nutrients. Then it somehow orders its host to march out of the nest and up a tree above the colony's trails. The fungus commands the ant to bite onto a vein of a leaf, then kills the thing and grows as a stalk out of the back of its head, turning it into a shower head raining spores onto victims down below.
Awesome.
Metal.
Yes. Truly absolute metal. And one thing is that the article is really well written, so it gives me this visual of just like showering spores down onto the brood below. But the other thing is they were trained, or the theory, the article is actually about how they've now discovered that climate change made it, in some parts of the world, made the ants and made the fungus behave differently, in that in some parts of the world, the leaves fall off once a year, and in other parts of the world, they don't. So climate change, if I understand this correctly, somehow led or trained or guided the ants, these zombie ants, to bite onto the twigs instead of the leaves. And so now they are living longer and becoming more popular, and they're not dying with the seasons. So the moral of the article is that we're done for. But it's like this fungus, it's a fungus. It's not, you know, it is a living, it's not a living being with a brain so much, but it is still adapts to climate change much better than human beings do, because the way we adapt to it is to elect Donald Trump and a Republican Congress who then hire Scott Pruitt, who has his assistants run around to get the right lotion and use Trump hotel mattresses for him. It's not looking good for us. We're not adapting to climate change the way that we should adapt to climate change. And I also just love the visual of the ant that is then like forced as a zombie to climb up the tree and then is killed and has a horn coming out of the back of its head, raining spores down onto the rest of the ants below.
Isn't that how trickle-down economics works?
Oh, man, yes. It is beautiful.
Nicely done. Yeah, I think the I first heard of that because when I played the excellent PlayStation game The Last of Us.
Mm.
Did you play
that? It's a documentary. I think I played it, yeah.
It's done by Naughty Dog, the guys that do Uncharted, which is also another
wonderful
series of games. But that's the thing, is there's a fungus that is infecting humans and turning them into zombies, and it overgrows their body and turns it into a spore factory, and it's a really interesting game, and they throw in like a little bit of science every few chapters as you're playing to kind of explain what's going on, because you don't know what's going on in the initial kind of piece of the game. And they mention that that ant, and I went and looked it up, and sure enough, that was a real thing. And it's it is wild, right? I mean, the set of steps that have to occur for this are not, it's not like oh, it goes off and then dies and then it kind of just, you know, turns into a thing. It's like, no, it you know, messes with the brain chemistry of the ant so much that it decides, oh, you know what, I'm gonna leave this nest where I've been all my life and then climb up to a thing and do this very strange, like, what? And evolution is whack, is what I'm trying to say.
Evolution is whack. Awesome.
Yes. Sometimes they're separated by only a very thin sheen between awesome and whack. So, yeah.
I think that was Albert Einstein that said that.
I think so. Yeah, we'll attribute to him. Sure.
Oh, speaking of video games, last night I put on order Far Cry 5. Fishing Simulator.
Oh.
So I should have an update for us in the near future.
Awesome.
Oh, man.
You have to come over and play.
Thank you. I will. I will take you up on that when I come back from my vacation.
Please rewind to insert episode here about Far Cry Fishing Simulator, which I think is hilarious. Such an interesting thing. Meanwhile, pre-orders have just gone up for Red Dead Redemption 2. So,
yes.
I will not be pre-ordering it because I don't believe in that, but I will probably buy it used later or just discounted later because I can wait. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I waited till the price drop on Far Cry, and it's pretty reasonable now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but kind of in that kind of gaming vein, there was some news that came out. I don't think it was last week. It may have been 2 weeks ago, the state of New Jersey had been suing forever to change some laws around sports gambling, because sports gambling, as is many forms of gambling inside the United States, is heavily regulated to the point where it's pretty much only legal in U.S. on U.S. land anyway, in Nevada and in New Jersey. Atlantic City and all that kind of thing. But sports gambling specifically was, for whatever reason, only in Nevada. And so the gaming commissions and I think even the state of New Jersey ended up saying, hey, we think that's silly. Give us sports gambling as well. And was it the Supreme Court that okayed it? Essentially, they said it should be up to the states. It's not something that the federal government specifically prohibits. So if the federal government doesn't explicitly prohibit it, this is how federalism works in the United States. If it's not prohibited at the federal level or addressed at the federal level, then it falls to the states to regulate it on their own. And so now it has opened up the possibility of sports gambling, not just in Nevada, but any other state can allow it and regulate it on their own without interference from the federal government. Which
fantastic idea
is gonna be wild. I mean, it will create a lot of probably a lot of business. I mean, gambling is one of the vices that I think are, you know, as they go, probably not so terrible. other than the actual money loss, it doesn't directly. You know, you're not exploiting anyone, so it's sort of good, and it's not messing with your body chemistry too much. Maybe your mental chemistry, if you are the kind of person prone to gambling and things like that. But I think it's a really, I think it's probably a net positive from a kind of state economics point of view for the states that are getting into that, and it also takes Nevada down a peg. Regarding that, which in my opinion is fine because I never want to go back there. not true. Nevada's fine, but if you kind of remove the that aspect of it for Nevada, it's kind of okay. Why am I going here again? What is the reason? And I think that's fine. They should come up with other reasons to go to Nevada. I would love to have other reasons. Besides me going there for work twice a year. Oh my God. I'm sorry. That might just be me talking. But I do, however, remember the first time I bet in a sports book in Nevada. It was at Lake Tahoe. And I remember that being really fun. Just the... like, look at all the sports that are happening right now, and I could bet on any of them. Wow. Yeah. That's
we do a yearly trip to Tahoe where we go and watch all the football games on all the screens and bet on everything for football and eat wings and drink beer, and it's amazing. But the thought of being able to do that without driving all the way to Tahoe is pretty nice. that cuts into our profit margin, you know, all that gas money.
There's that.
I haven't heard at all if any states have moved on that yet. Have you?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is a very recent decision, but I feel like it's the kind of thing people would want to do like right away. I mean,
I think I read something about how a lot of this is also still going to come down to the Native American tribes.
There's going to be it's going to be a lot of lawsuits and discussions and everything happening in that area, I believe.
Yeah. So it's going to be a while before we're able to actually
waste our money in that way. I mean, sorry, did I say that out loud? Did I say that out loud?
I finally came out ahead last year for the first time. Tom Brady didn't ruin my day.
For once. Brady! Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, I think that will be it'll be interesting to see how that's implemented state by state, because I think if it's like all the other stuff that's implemented state by state, there's going to be some variances, so there may still be kind of like a not a tourism aspect, but maybe a little bit like a gambling tourism kind of aspect. The other end of it is, I think, and I think this is mostly true, is that Well, maybe not. I'm not sure. Let me take that back. Because when we talked about fantasy sports a while ago, in insert episode here, when there were those like kind of single day fantasy league things, you know, the ones that were doing, you know, you all pay into a thing and then whoever's first gets whatever that, you know, that pot is or whatever. And I think those aspects of it where it's where, you know, it is really, really kind of set up in a way that sounds like it's skill based. It's essentially still like a very, very fine kind of lottery. And I think that that aspect of it is something that is if anything needs to be addressed, it's that aspect of it, is that the you know, that, because what I don't want to see, I hope that's not a thing, is that the kind of rise of professional gambling in that way. Like, I will gamble for entertainment, but I think the thought of trying to turn my life into a gambling specific enterprise is a terrible idea. And yet, I am not most people, I suspect. I think that's the kind of thing. It's like, I can beat the house. I can do that. It's like, I don't, you know, no.
Every gambling movie I've ever seen tells me no.
Yeah. Personally, I'm scared to the death of going gambling. I just think that it's something that I will not be good at and not be able to stop until I have none of the money. So I'm just shying away from it.
Well, you can always you know, bet in Deadpools. That was a terrible transition. We're just gonna roll into it though, because
wait, can we start a podcast Deadpool? as the youngest member of the podcast.
Anyway, a couple weeks ago, Deadpool 2 came out. I'm pretty sure we talked about the first Deadpool when it came out, so we wanted to say a few words about it this time, because it's a sequel. A lot of people were, you know, like, is it going to be good because it's a sequel? You know, are they going to hit like a sophomore slump? Is it not going to be, you know, as wonderful as the first one is? And I just really liked it. I didn't think too much about it from a comparison perspective. I think if you liked the level of the first one, you're gonna like the level of the second one. The things you don't like about the first one, you're probably still not gonna like about the second one.
Yeah, I think they made a really smart move bringing in David Leitch to direct. Mm-hmm. Bring in the guy who did John Wick and Atomic Blonde, and now he's got Deadpool 2. Like, that guy knows how to make a good movie.
Yeah.
Who did the first one?
Tim Miller.
Hmm.
And I guess there were some creative differences between him and Ryan Reynolds or something. Who's still great. Still great, great movie.
Yeah, I have not seen the second one yet, but I saw the first one and enjoyed that one a ton. My favorite story about it is how Ryan Reynolds liked the writer team so much that he actually paid to have them on set every day to improvise lines. The studio wouldn't pony up the money for doing it, so he paid it out of his own pocket. But for the second one, the studio was like, yep, that was a good idea. They will be on set at all times, which is hilarious, because all of those good improvised quippy lines, you never see Ryan Reynolds' mouth, so you don't need him to speak it right then and there. You can fix that shit in post for months afterwards.
Yeah, look at that timing down perfect. I think it was good. I think they did an appropriate level of kind of upping the scope a little bit, because I think you have to, from a sequel point of view. I mean, you don't have to, but that it's being a superhero movie, you sort of have to. And they did it in a way that is not too much. At the same time, I think the parts that were weakest in it are similar to the parts in the first one, where it's like, where it's trying to be more of a traditional superhero movie. That's when it's kind of like, you know, let's go back to the jokes.
I thought Josh Brolin was great as Cable.
Oh yeah.
I really like Zazie Beetz as Domino. she was excellent.
Yeah, the whole X-Force kind of aspect was great, I think.
Yeah, I really don't want to spoil this movie for Jorgen because it's real good.
Oh no, it's good, and I think they kept that kind of flavor from the comic a little bit, because if you read Deadpool or X-Force or anything like that, it is kind of like the I don't know, second tier is the wrong word, but it's sort of like that. It's like they know they are, and it's just like, well, that means we have the freedom to do whatever we want, and that's kind of how the movie was approached, which I think fits a lot. If I can say one thing, which isn't a spoiler, it's that you should stay for the credits sequence because it's great.
Yeah, it that might have been the hardest I laughed at the whole movie was in the post-credits sequence. Like, I laughed a lot during the movie. I loved it. It was hilarious. But it was the best end credit sequence.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. Definitely worth the viewing, MoviePass or no. Is MoviePass still around? We haven't checked in with them recently.
I used it to go see Solo.
Nice.
I don't feel like this is a spoiler, but because I didn't even know this while I was watching the movie, it wasn't until after the movie I was reading about it, I discovered that there's a cameo by Matt Damon and Alan Tudyk in the movie. What? And I recognized in the movie it was Alan Tudyk, but I did not realize it was Matt Damon. So I need to rewatch it to watch for that.
Okay. See. All right. Well, that's fine. I was probably going to see it again anyway.
Apparently, he's not even credited. They used his name from Talented Mr. Ripley.
Nice.
In the credits.
That's great.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Wonderful Matt Damon.
Yeah, he's on fire with those Marvel appearances.
I used MoviePass 2 weeks ago to see the movie Show Dogs,
My condolences.
I'm still crying on the inside. I just feel badly for dogs in general to be associated with something like that.
Okay. I don't know if I would put money towards that. I mean, Will Arnett, as funny as he is, it still looked like not for me.
Yeah, no, that I lost all of my respect for Will Arnett after watching that movie.
Oh,
and
he's
just barely making it up now that I'm watching a series of unfortunate events on Netflix.
Oh, and the new Arrested Development is out on Netflix.
It is.
I believe it is. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. I watched the first few episodes. It takes a little time to get kind of momentum again, but it's good.
Cool.
They'll never recapture the original energy, but
well, hopefully it's not going back to the well too many times in that case.
No, it's very timely with our current political and social issues going on.
current events.
Yeah,
awesome. Well, we will have more current events coming to you as we record our show. Again, we hope to continue recording the show. If you would like to be related to the show in any fashion, you can be a guest, you can give us ideas, you can talk about things, you can talk about not things. Please hit us up on all the various platforms that we have. You can tweet at us, you can find us on Facebook, you can find us at notathingpodcast.com. Where the HAL 900 will take your emails. I have not looked at emails this week to see if there have been any new ones, but hopefully there are some. So please let us know. Please keep in touch, and please keep listening to the show.
And sponsor us.
Oh, that's true. That would be great. in that case, gentlemen, I'll talk to you next week.
Awesome sauce. Take care.
Until next time.